Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. One of the things that's really important to me in this podcast is to share the weirdness and the different experiences from lots of different perspectives. We've talked a lot about changing identity, and we've talked about it with careers, we've talked about it with dating, with housing, and how all of these different things impact the way that we think about ourselves. And one of the things that I realized we haven't talked about at all is around gender, and how it might be as you go through your late 20s, your 30s, or even as you get a bit older, that your experience with your body and your perception of your gender might also be a massive part of your identity that starts to change. And what's interesting is that I have a friend who I kind of knew from afar was going through some sort of changes with their gender identity. We are good friends, but we live in very different circles. We move with very different friends. And generally when we get together, it's like catching up about stuff and often, to be honest, a lot of like long political rants. But I saw that they'd started sharing a few things on social media. And I kind of thought, okay, I feel like they're going through some sort of big change, but it's not something that you text and be like, oh, hey, so like what's going on with your gender identity? You don't kind of drop it into a text like that. It would be quite weird. And I think that we live in a world where there are so many opinions about gender and about transness and about the politics of it and the medical side of this, that it really clouds the people at the heart of this discussion. Like, this isn't about politics and it isn't about data. Ultimately, right in the middle of these stories are people having real human experiences. And I guess I'd read so much about the politics and I'd read so much about, you know, all these things that get very divisive in terms of media, but I hadn't ever really sat down with someone and talked about what is that experience like in your 30s, really realizing that the body that you have, it doesn't align with you, or it's never aligned with you, perhaps. So I had been seeing these things that Zara had posted on and off, and I felt, yeah, it's time that I kind of move into that kind of topic that really ties into everything we're talking about in this podcast, identity and changes and how we navigate through the world. So I dropped them a message and said, look, we haven't caught up in a while, and this is something we've never really talked about, but I would love to talk about it with you, and maybe we do it on the podcast if you feel like it. And they said, absolutely, can't wait. I'm going to come on. Let's do it. This episode is a little bit different because I'm not throwing in lots of facts and stats and things like that. It's two friends having a conversation that we haven't had before, which is one of them experiencing changes in their gender identity and how that looks like in their life and how they're navigating that in their 30s. Zara is so amazing, and I really value their friendship and how they bring lots of different perspectives to my life and how they're always so open and honest and vulnerable in the way that they want to talk about their own experiences. So that's what we're going to do. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi, Zara. Welcome to the beige couch.
Love it.
Looking pretty fly.
We need a logo.
Oh my God, I would actually love a logo.
I'd
love like a neon sign.
Like, yeah, I feel like you need that. I feel like every
I mean, I have a logo. Obviously.
No, I know. I mean, like, you need a logo like
on the wall.
On the wall here.
That's probably above the pay grade that I'm paying for the studio.
What if we do a DIY one, and then you can just
like, stick it up every week. I feel like this episode's going to be funny because we were saying we haven't really prepped.
Nope.
But this is a conversation that it's not like been on my mind or something. I've been like, oh, I have to speak to Zara about this. But obviously you've gone through lots of kind of changes. I mean, a million different changes with work, with life, all sorts of things in the last many years since we met. When did we meet?
2019, 18, 19.
Yeah, a while ago through work. And yeah, sometimes things pop up in your story and I'm always like, oh yeah, I see you're like, things are changing. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So we're just going to fucking wrap it out.
Yeah, it's true. We usually do engage mainly on like very long political discourse exchanges.
I know. It's like we won't speak for months, and then we'll
be like, hey, look, this happened. What do you think about this in the state of the economic world?
Yeah, and then we'll sit at a dinner table in East London and people around us are like, these guys need to chill.
Like, this so intense.
So fucking intense. Talk about the weather. Talk about what you're doing.
Talk about your boyfriends.
Yeah.
Multiple.
We're not doing that. But yeah, when we met, you were married when we met.
I was married when we met. When we met, I was married to an amazing person named Arvin, who is also a trans angel.
Yeah.
But at the time we were, yeah, I feel like it's a good way to start because I feel like at the time, my gender expression was very different than what it is now. And so was Arvin, and, you know, I had sort of like my own version of living my queerness. Mm. And what I love about queerness is that it changes a lot, and it's like, I love the fluidity of it, and I feel like in the last 5 years maybe, I kind of like took a bit of like a more intentional approach and like kind of like leaned in more into exploring my gender expression and my gender identity per se. But when we met, I was a butch lesbian, I would identify probably as. But I mean, I've always been like a tomboy, quote unquote.
Like a hot mask.
A hot mask?
Yeah.
Thank you. But I definitely, I feel like my sexuality is something that I hardly ever struggled with, if I'm honest, like in understanding and coming to terms with it. Like for me, it was pretty easy to understand that I did not like men like that, and I loved women, and, you know, I was a lesbian, and I kind of like find my proudness in being a lesbian quite early on, and, you know, it's a journey that for a lot of people can be difficult and you know, tumultuous, whereas I was just like, girls.
Were you like straight out the bat when you said you found it kind of like easy? You found it easy for yourself, but in like, you know, the environment you grew up, because you grew up in Italy, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Italy. My parents are Muslim as well. So the environment, like the external factors, obviously have never been easy. I don't think most people who are queer could tell you that obviously you have had like some bad experiences, whether it's like acceptance within like a close family and friend circle, or more of like a societal, or strangers, workplace, etc. I feel like there's all sort of like discriminations and stuff, obviously. But within myself, I never sort of like found myself, you know, sitting on the couch wondering what's wrong with me, or if something is different, and why am I different, and if I do like girls, or how and why, you know what I mean? Like, it was just more like, I just don't like boys. And
I've gay awakening moment, because I feel like
I've had several gay awakening moments. Is a bit, I mean, there's this volleyball anime called Mila and Shiro.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a cartoon, it's an anime cartoon about the Japanese volleyball team. And there's a character called Mila, which is a girl, and Shiro is a guy. And when I was like 9 years old, I wanted to dress like Shiro, and I wanted to get someone to dress like Mila and be my girlfriend.
Right. It's those cartoons. Like, I was chatting to them, and they were like, yeah, it was Nala from the Lion King.
Yeah, Lion King. Like, yeah. Mulan is a big one for me as well.
Mulan, I get, though, obviously.
Mulan, to the point that my parents, I think, low key started clocking in. They were like, let's just like not give you any ideas to, you know, dress like a boy and go to war or something. But yeah, so like, my sexuality has always been more like, you know, I know, and I felt very comfortable. And to be honest, it wasn't until like later in my life, where it was about like maybe like 20, 25, where I met more and more queer people, more and more lesbians, and I got more friends and that were queer, identified as lesbians, and, you know, hearing their perspectives and had their journey about how they came along into terms, so acceptance within themselves and their sexuality. It wasn't until then that I realized that my experience was actually quite smooth sailing.
Yeah,
like, within myself, because then when I started embark myself in the journey of gender identity discovery, then I was like, oh, this is what people are talking about when they're like, you know, I was gay and I was like confused, and I felt like repressed, or if like, you know, all these sort of emotions that people feel when they're coming to terms with an identity that they have, I think can be quite like difficult, which has been for me in discovering my gender identity, but has equally been like, I wouldn't say probably the best like journey so far. And I'm very excited, scared, but excited about, you know, all the other sort of things that I will discover within myself as I navigate the world as a non-binary person, and understanding what that means to me, I think, more than, you know, just the label, because I feel like everybody kind of knows the labels, but there's more to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that, isn't it? Because everyone's, like, coming out story is so different of, you know, I grew up in Brighton, so, like, we were all gay. or bi. Like, amazing. There was no coming out story for anyone. We were just like, I'm dating this person now. Like, it just wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
And then I've, you know, met people, one of my best friends, he didn't come out until uni. And I remember, like, it was such a big thing and being like, I'm just so confused because where I grew up, it just, like, no one gave a fuck. So, like, the idea to me that someone would really hold that back in themselves was, like, it was, yeah, I guess a little bit of, like, not an insensitivity, but I just didn't understand that people would have, like, a really horrible journey in that way.
Hard relate. Like, I think, you know, the pandemic has fucked a lot of these weird years. but I think the pandemic in the queer community, I think a lot of people will tell you that more and more people have, especially women, I think, or maybe that's just my bubble, because obviously I have more, like, sort of women and non-men friends that are queer. But I think I have personal friends, personal connections that I sort of, like, have come to terms more and more and with their sexuality during the pandemic. And
really?
As we were friends, I kind of got the chance to be next to these folks as they were discovering these things. So it's reaching not until then that I was like, oh, wow, this is like a daunting thing. Not that I didn't know necessarily, but I always thought that the difficult part about coming out was in relation to external factors, like being accepted in family, friends, culture, co-workers, culture, the society that you live in. Because for me, again, personally, I've looked at myself in the mirror since I was very little and being like, oh, I'm going to have a girlfriend, I'm going to have a wife and, you know, all those things. But yeah, non-binary for me is the equivalent, I guess, to like coming out, like my hardest, most difficult coming out with myself has definitely been like being non-binary, because when I was younger, I felt very disconnected from my body, like very, very disconnected. I almost never felt like I had a body. My perception of myself was always like, I'm just a soul. And I never felt like the connection the connection between my body and my soul and myself.
Yeah.
And I've always blamed it on, you know, the good, amazing patriarchal society that pushes people born as women specifically to kind of like have expectation on the way you should look and how thin you're meant to be and your boobs and your bum and your skin and all those things. And I just thought, oh, maybe I'm, you know, just different. Obviously, I grew up in Italy, so there's not many folks that look like me apart from my beautiful family. So I thought I always associated my discomfort and my disconnection with my body with this sense of like not belonging or like not seeing like loads of representation or not feeling comfortable in the shape of my body. But I think as I grew up, I understood that it was more complex than that. And it was more like, sure, there's obviously element of patriarchy everywhere, but I think it was more to do with like feeling a bit stuck in like bodies and identities feeling at least quite binary for me growing up. Like, this is a body of a girl, this is a body of a boy, like, cool, you're a lesbian, but I thought I'm still a girl, so I should look like a girl, and I couldn't quite do that, and like felt like I was like dressing up a little bit every time I was trying. Not that I ever worn like anything particularly feminine, but in general, when certain types of like shapes, etc., I always felt like I had to like try at least and like be a little bit more girly, or especially for like dressing up, etc. And then as I grew up, I understood that obviously I just never felt comfortable in like having to be one thing or the other.
Yeah.
And obviously I built on that and kind of like did a lot of discovery within that space within me to kind of like understand what that means for me. And then it's so funny because I met other non-binary people and I discovered everybody does non-binary different as well, which is completely, it makes sense, obviously, because it's a fluid thing. But I feel like 16-year-old me or 14-year-old me that knew that they were like a butch lesbian, knew that you know, you could also just find ways of expressing yourself that aren't necessarily binary, which I feel like I didn't know when I was younger.
I'd never even like thought of that with the overlap, I guess, of being lesbian and gender, just because even in like a representation in media, it's often like, you know, the lipstick lesbians and then the butch lesbians. And it's like, well, a lipstick lesbian must go with a butch lesbian because that's the girl and the boy. And it's
I am a big hater of these sort of like attempts at boxing folks in the queer community. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm against trying to box anyone, to be honest. But I think within the queer community, I find it particularly, like, I fight against it quite actively because I think, you know, my personal interpretation of queerness is very vast and is quite rooted in, you know, trying to go against the status quo, not in like a rebellious way, more in like a liberating way, and try and do things differently and, you know, live relationship differently, approach like relationship with yourself differently, because a lot of what gets thought to us from patriarchy is obviously cis, heteronormative, you know. So I think sometimes there's replicas of these sort of like structures in other pockets of communities. Obviously, I'm also a black person, so I can see elements of that replicating in the black community, and I also see elements of that replicating in queer community. And queer community, especially, I think you said something funny about, like, you know, the expectation of like a type of lesbian to be paired with another type of lesbian. And I always joke that that's not really different than, you know, George asking me who's the boy and who's the man in my relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of like...
But that's how it used to be. It's people used to say,
shocked, because I think...
Which one's the guy? It's like, well, actually, we're lesbians, so the point is there is no guy.
There is no guy. I got asked like 2 years ago, who's going to be the man of my home?
The man of your home?
Yeah, who's the man of the home? I'm like, well...
Wow.
But there has to be one that kind of takes... I mean, like, no, I won't. Like, I mean, personally, I am trying, not we, because I'm not like the queer pope. Sorry, guys. Not taking that.
Like, if you're in the
grandpa, gay black pope. Let's go.
Can that be your new DJ name? Gay black pope.
The gay black pope. How many people will try and cancel me? Quite a bit. No, but... I think personally, I'm trying, like, in my life as a queer person and in my relationship as a queer person, my relationships, like, whether platonic or romantic, like, I'm trying to build my relationship and structure my relationships in ways that feel liberating and freeing and, you know, are kind of, like, more encompassing of, like, a lifestyle and a way of living and a way of, like, showing up for each other and for community. And I think sometimes you'll be surprised how many, you know, TikTok holes there are still, pockets of TikTok there are still where, you know, you see like a lesbian couple and there's a butch lesbian, with a femme lesbian, a stem lesbian, with a femme lesbian, and you see two masked lesbians and there's still so many people who are like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? As if like two people cannot love each other and, you know, have their own roles within their own relationship that are not kind of like read off a script that someone else has done for them. I think like, you know, if someone looks more masculine, the assumption that that person has a particular role in the house, in the bedroom or anywhere else is just very confining. And I think that's just not how I personally live my queerness. But I know... I'm a big hater. I think, like, I'm a hater. I actually think I'm a hater. I'm genuinely a hater. I'm a big lover, but I think to be a big lover, you have to be a bit of a hater.
Yeah, you've got to have an enemy.
You've got to have an enemy, because otherwise, why am I spreading this love for? And my enemy is stop putting lesbians in boxes.
Completely.
Let masked lesbians date masked lesbians and don't ask who does what, because that's none of your business.
Well, because also I just feel like that's what so many of us are trying to do, even in like heteronormative relationships. Like, we're all trying to break down like this bullshit of that, like, the man has to be the provider and therefore the woman has to be the homemaker.
Yes.
And it's like, we're all trying to do that anyway.
Well, I'm trying to be a stay-at-home dad.
Are you?
Actually, I actually am, generally. Not trying actively, but I mean, like, I'll be super open to it. I'm like,
I don't understand why more...
Why do men want to work?
Don't understand why more men don't want to be settling down.
Did anybody ask them? Like, I don't think they want to work.
Yeah, there was this thing, like, look, this is pop culture, like, hardcore, but there's MAFS, Married at First Sight.
Yes.
Australia.
Big
fan. Amazing.
Big fan.
I'm fucking obsessed
big
with
fan.
It.
Big fan.
There was
very
a guy
toxic.
On there. Oh, very so toxic. That's why I love it.
Very fan. Very big fan.
Yeah, I want to be in a group chat. I'm doing voice notes of every episode.
Have you finished the latest series?
Of Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah, babe, that finished weeks ago. Of course, I've watched it all.
Have you seen Clint and Lauren?
No, Clint, and now he's engaged to Jackie. Wait, do you not know this?
Oh, no, Jackie, not Lauren. Sorry.
Yeah, Lauren was his first wife.
Yeah. Jackie, yes. He asked her to marry her at the viewing party of the reunion.
Yeah, that's
episode.
Unbelievable.
With everybody else in the cast and press and media there.
Unbelievable.
Like, love that show.
But there was a guy on there, Ryan, and he got so offended when Jackie was like, you know, if something happened to me, would you be a stay-at-home dad? And he was so angry. And I just think, I've for a long time said, the one way that the patriarchy gives me a little bit of a boost is that when I'm fucking bored of earning money, they will give me a pat on the back for being like, I'm just going to stay at home and have a kid.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's currently you still have to have kids in order to validate your husband paying your life and staying at home, which is annoying.
Yeah, which is...
But I don't know why more men don't do it. It looks like a pretty fun situation.
Yeah. Also, I don't know, let the girls be boss bitches.
Let the girls be the bosses.
Yeah, just learn how to make a bread or something. Also, I... Personally, in my relationship, we talk a lot about, like, taking turns.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the idea of, like, you know, having times where someone can fulfill and focus more on their own passions and, you know, take a little break from a career that maybe is not 100% aligned with everything that you believe in and you want to do 24/7. And, you know, you go and have, like, 3 months of, like, learning a new hobby or something. And if I can provide, like, so be it. And swap, and at one point we'll swap, etc., etc. We talk about these things a lot, and
yeah,
like how to kind of, like, we come from very different, like, careers.
Mm.
So, you know, I am never been someone to let my career be like sort of like a obstacle, or like earning differences be like a obstacle in like building the life that we want together.
Mm.
And I think it's quite refreshing to, like, manage to, like, try actively, especially because now we are in, like, the peak of the weird years, the 32, and, like, trying to understand what you want to do in life and answer all these big, scary questions. I think it's been really refreshing to be able to be in a queer relationship that truly feels queer for all the things that I believe in to be queer and to be the most amazing parts of being queer. So like having this chance of like redefining like roles and what you need and nurture each other in like in ways that are different than what you've been taught or what you've been expected. And I think it's been quite interesting for me as well to like, you know, I said earlier like don't assume, etc. But I think when you look like me and you grow up being like a mask butch lesbian, people do attach like perception and expectations or assumptions onto you. And I think especially as you grow up, like you tend to absorb a lot of those, and you know, you kind of like tend to put yourself in the box where other people are.
Yeah, it's like self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, someone tells you that way, you do it.
So someone tells you or makes an assumption that, you know, you're the tough guy of the couple, and like you assume certain roles in the relationship, etc., etc., and you almost kind of like believe that that's like where that's your spot, like that's where you kind of like have to fit in, and you become scared of like venturing out.
Yeah.
And I think it's been incredibly refreshing for me to like venture out freely and like be able to be everything that I want to be as a queer non-binary person. And I honestly forget sometimes I'm non-binary. Like I feel like it's just who I am now, which makes me really happy even to say out loud. Like, I obviously don't say these things. So I don't talk about these
things. You don't
have a badge. All that much. Good job, guys. No, but it's quite refreshing because now I'm like, of course I'm non-binary. Like, what the fuck was I even thinking? Like, who is she? Like, don't know her. But, yeah, it is a... Do you have a question?
No, I mean, I just think it's interesting that, like, it sounds like the journey that you've gone through in like your non-binary, working that all out and the stickiness of what you said, is almost like the foundation for really thinking about what does it mean to not be like, you know, to be actual partners, and also what does it mean to be actually have so many like dualities or different versions of, you know, how you express yourself as a person, your personality and your interests and all those things. It almost sounds like the journey of experiencing, you know, I'm non-binary has got you to that because you're taking apart all this other shit in your head.
Yeah, 100%. I also think like transness for me is ever-changing, and it is synonymous with an ever-evolving, beautiful thing. Like, most of my friends that I know that are trans, what it means to be trans for them and for me constantly changes. Like,
right,
it's like, okay, now I feel like I've reached it. I'm like, this is the expression that I want to have of my non-binary or my transness. But then it changes because there's another thing that you kind of like want to dismantle within yourself or when you perceive yourself, etc. So they're all interconnected. I think the parts of like, because I think queerness is an identity for me. And like identity means everything that you are.
Yeah.
All the parts of you. And I think for me, it's been quite stupid looking back, trying to be like queer in my sexuality and ignore everything else, like ignore all the other aspects of my identity that I also need to be queer. Is that making any sense?
It kind of does, but I've never heard it this way. So I'm interested in like when you think about your identity, you think about, I guess, gender on one side and sexuality as well. But then you're saying there's all this other stuff that it plays into.
That's an interesting one. So I think when I think about my identity, I think about my gender identity and I think about my identity as Zara, which is encapsulating my gender identity, my sexuality, my race, my culture, the place I grew up in, my traditions, etc., etc. So that's kind of like how I look at my identity as a whole.
Yeah.
I think transness is above a lot, like defines a lot of other ways that I kind of like approach everything else within me. Like I think being non-binary and being trans has taught me to allow for myself to like ever change and like constantly, you know, mold into different things without having necessarily like major like expectations on what I need to be. Like I think trans has allowed me to just be. Like once I realized I was non-binary, I was like, oh, okay, like I've tried myself so hard to box myself in a binary word, and I thought that my response to the binary word to fulfill who I am was being a lesbian, and I thought that was going to be enough, and that wasn't enough because I still felt like I wasn't completely in touch with who I am. And then once I realized that I am non-binary and I started like learning and talking to more trans people, connecting to more trans people, learning, reading from thousands of people that come before us, I think what stood out for me is this sentiment of change, this sort of like a lot, like transness almost allows you to like change and like be okay with like constantly changing and finding yourself. I think I'm getting lost, but
no, but I mean it feels like it was making me think from like a cis experience of, yeah, I guess as a woman, so many stages of our lives are like predefined of like you're the girlfriend and then you're the wife and then you're the mother and then you're like the caregiver to the family, and a lot of people then go on to be like the matriarch of, you know, whatever it is in their culture or their society around them. But yeah, it kind of made me think like, is what you've gone through almost like a breakdown of those things that really, like, I think this is what a lot of cis women are waking up to. It's like, I don't want to fucking be a mom, or I don't want to do this thing.
Yeah.
And that is almost like, I'm just speaking as I'm thinking, there is now no label for a woman, a cis woman who doesn't want to be defined by any of those things. That doesn't exist. Like, it's still like when you show up and you look a certain way or your, you know, passport says a certain thing, people will project that onto you regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my version of that is very similar. I think my when I say trans has allowed me to like be myself, I think once I realized that I was non-binary, then I was like, oh, okay, I was struggling so hard to fit in the box of the butch mask lesbian,
right,
who is the provider, the strong one in the couple, you know, do you want my jacket, babe? It's like type of vibe. I'm cold. I don't want to give anyone my jacket. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no.
Also, you're like the most in touch person with your feelings. Like, yeah, you're such a softy,
you know what
romantic.
I mean? Like, I'm
well.
Such a softie, and like, yeah. I feel like a long time in my life, I had to live up to this expectation of like, you know, you're not a girl, so like, you're not as like, you don't act like a girl, so you definitely don't need the things that girls like, which I'm like, what do girls even like that boys don't like? Boys should need what girls need. I'm going to tell you. Like,
yeah.
But in general, I think like it has allowed me to be like, yeah, fuck that. Like, what does that mean? I want to be nurtured. I want to, you know, be in a relationship and and build friendships where people cater for me. I want to get rid of my hyper-independence that I have from, you know, being an eldest, and on top of that being, you know, presenting in a masculine way or whatnot. And I feel like the more I've leaned in to all these aspects, the more things have just, like... It's funny because something stupid just came to my mind. Like, I've never worn a skirt until I... was comfortable in saying to myself in the mirror, I'm a non-binary person. I've literally never worn a skirt before.
That's so ridiculous.
And now I love a skirt. I love a skirt layering moment. I love a skirt.
Because you, before you were like, a skirt makes me a girl.
Yeah, because like...
I'm not a femme lesbian, I'm a butch lesbian.
Yeah, so
right.
If I look like this and I'm not, you know, I don't have long nails and long hair and all the things that people associate with being a femme. So if I will, if I dress in a skirt... I look like him. I'm in costume because, like, I felt like I was in costume because I felt like I had no right to like dress like that. Or if I dress like that, then I was self-identifying as a girl, but then I'm not a girl, and all these things. Whereas, like, when I was non-binary, I was like, this is literally just a piece of clothing.
Do you think then, this is going to sound weird, but like, do you think then the status of like a gender identity is, it's almost always relative? Because if no one was putting anything onto you, you wouldn't necessarily feel like repressed in any way.
I think yes, theoretically yes. I think in theory, yeah, but I think in practice, it's sort of like very utopic at the moment to like expect, you know, for no one to put you in a box, so for you not to get out of the box. Like, I think sadly right now, I mean, I would love for all those boxes to go away, but the boxes are here, right? Like the boxes are here. Like, there's still a lot of acceptance work and, you know, like fucking rights for trans people and other people that we have so much work to do. So I think at the moment you kind of have to go through that journey. For obviously this journey is different for anybody and everybody. So I'm sure like there's non-binary people who have been wearing skirts since they were like identifying as something else. But I think for me, definitely, like, I had to, like, break out of the boxes where I had put myself in, and the boxes were created by the society, the lovely patriarchal cis society that we live in. And now that I'm out of it, I'm like, definitely we shouldn't have boxes. But I also understand that saying we shouldn't have boxes and labels can be dangerous in a way in this day and age, because obviously it empowers people to like erase people's identities and stuff like that, which I feel like is a bit complex.
It's so interesting because I remember us talking about this years ago.
I literally was thinking about this conversation this morning when I was getting ready to come here.
Because we had this conversation, I remember you talking about like non-binary, and you said you were kind of exploring it, like starting to understand it a bit. And I said, like, I just don't get it because from my point of view, like, I think because I wouldn't say I have a gender identity, I would just, or maybe I do, I don't know. It's just not something I've thought about. I've just been like, okay, I have a sex, like I have a body, right?
Yeah.
And this is my body and it makes sense to me, it's fine, whatever. And I'd said like, surely what we need to do is expand how people view like male and female rather. And I remember saying like, I'll probably get cancelled for this now, but I remember saying like, does an extra box almost invalidate
the
thing? Because if we want to make both genders, like so that a man can wear a dress if he wants to, girl can do whatever they want, like, do we invalidate that? But I think the way you've just explained it and the more I'm understanding it now, it's like you have to make the next thing before the next thing becomes normality.
You have to build a better building for them to like you should demolish all the buildings and be like, oh, free town. But I think we need it now. Like, it's very needed because we have the boxes and this is what's happening to trans people regardless. Mm. And we still have boxes and we still have, like, you know, last year Trans Pride was the most busy Pride, Trans Pride in Europe. This year they're expecting double the people. So there's definitely that kind of awareness and, you know, more representation. Millennials and Gen Zers are becoming older and becoming more prevalent on platforms. And there's more and more, you know, none of this existed when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, none of this. And yet alone all the people, let alone the people that came before me who were trans, because trans people have existed from the beginning of time.
Yeah.
And imagine those folks who had nobody, like, showing them, like, how to do, et cetera. And they still did it, which is why we always say that trans people are fucking resilient and we'll be okay at the end of it. But at
the
same time.
And the foundation, like, of making being gay in general, like, regardless of gender, like, more acceptable.
I feel like trans people have been at the forefront of queer liberation, and now we need everybody who's queer and cisgender to be at the front of trans liberation. Yeah. And then when we do that, we probably could be. Do we even need it? Why we were fight? What was that about? You know what I mean? But I think at the moment, it's needed for people to, like, be able to, like, have. Almost like, as they untangle the binary, it's helpful to have to see that something else not only exists, but it's validated, has a name, and a lot of people are attaching themselves to that name and that flag, et cetera, et cetera, because I think that's important.
Mm.
In 60 years, I don't know if that will be as important, because look at us now, like, you know, is this in the 80s, if you were a gay man, probably the first question you get asked is, you're a bottom or a top? You know? I don't know, because I'm not a gay man, but I would like to hope, and from what I see, obviously that discourse is becoming more and more old, and we're more now open to different approaches to sex and roles, et cetera, et cetera. So that's just a silly example to say that society inevitably grows out of things. Like, we don't need, like, you know, we don't need a leash and a label the whole time. We just need it so that we can move forward to the next thing. But it's a very interesting one, because I have a lot of, not a lot, but I have a few queer friends who don't really think that, like, we need, like, pronouns, or, like, you know, that we need, like, the such strict gender identifications, etc.
But what do you mean, as in, like, the binary? Because what pronouns do you use?
They, them.
They, them, yeah. So that they don't think that you need to have they, them, or that everyone could just be...
They just think everybody could just be whatever they want, right? Yeah, so, like, when someone, like, someone... This person asked someone, what's your pronouns? Mm. This person responded, she, her, but she, they, everything goes. And this person, in response, was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't even think we need pronouns. Which, obviously, comes from the same place of what you're saying now, right? Mm. Like, do we need these boxes? We're walking... working towards not having to need to, like, necessarily identify things, but for where we are now, little silly things like pronouns are not that silly for a lot of people. They're like a way of, like, liberating themselves and, like, showing up as, allowing themselves to show up as their true selves, and it's a very courageous act for a lot of people to kind of be like, you know, I to this day don't even, like, unmute sometimes and cause and say my pronouns are they, them. Like, I still don't do it, and it's been 6 years. So I feel like sometimes, you know, for us, small things are quite big and can be quite big, because I think they're attached to who we are, like, inside. And, like, you know, there's all this stupid discourse about bathrooms and all that stuff, like, which is not stupid. Like, I'm not discrediting. It's harmful and it's bad and it shouldn't be happening, but thinking that the problem, or, like, the main thing that's important for trans people is bathrooms, is a bit reductive.
Yeah, it's like, that's not actually the big issue.
That's actually not the main issue. Like, also like, yeah, it's a very interesting time.
Well, it's also not the main issue in women's safety. This is what always pisses me off, is that when I meet someone and the times they really care about women's safety is in relation to bathrooms, I just go, like, do you know where most women get sexually assaulted? It's in the home.
Yeah.
Like, most people, like, if it was a massive thing that, like, women are getting sexually assaulted all the time in bathrooms, I'd be like, maybe there's a...
But that cannot even happen because numerically, yeah, in the United Kingdom, there's less than 2% of trans people.
Mm.
Let's just have a silence moment here. Because, like, you see all the press, you see all the commentary, you see this, like, incredibly negative, like, rhetoric being pushed about trans people and, you know, how almost like this fight as, like, trans people are going to get to the two rights that they need and you're going to get one right less. Trans people are we're so few in numbers. And what most trans people, I would almost say all trans people want, is just access to healthcare.
Yeah. Safety.
Like, nobody's asking much more, because these two things will allow us to fucking, like, thrive, because trans people are intelligent, talented, amazing individuals who have all sorts of skills and all sorts of industry that you can think of. So if safety and healthcare were accessible, what sort of harm and rhetoric would be there to be pushed about trans people? I almost dare say they might just go about and live their lives and wow, nobody even knows. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there was this fitness influencer that opened a women-only gym. She's a queer woman.
Okay.
She opened a gym that's women-only and started crowdfunding, I want to say, like, about a year ago.
Is this the one that's, like, the really pink gym?
I've never seen it in London.
I've seen two. One which was, like, a hardcore, like, it was, like, a women's body, like, bodybuilding gym.
Might be that one.
And the other one was, like, everything was just pink.
No, I think it might be the bodybuilding one. Did a crowdfunding, like, about a year ago.
Yeah.
Being like, this is going to be a women's only gym, a safe space for the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
Trans women are going to be welcome, as if that was a question. But, and this person went on and opened the gym, like, about a month ago, I want to say, 2 months ago. And shortly before opening, she said that upon further reflection, trans women were not welcome in the gym. And the gym was a women only gym. Obviously this happened, like, I want to say, like, a couple of weeks before the Supreme Court ruling on biological sex. This person, a couple of weeks prior, was like, oh, the gym is going to be only for women. So there was a major backlash, because obviously it was a crowdfunded project also. So I'm investing in something that I believe in, the vision that I believe in, and then that vision is now another vision. So obviously a lot of people were upset. On top of it, incredible amount of transphobia. And someone in the comments, I love reading comments, because I think there's more for me to reflect on, because it's almost like you see one person that's making the content or the video that you're seeing, and then you see thousands of people, perspectives. Yeah. So I really, really spent a lot of time in comment sections. And I remember seeing someone that was like, how are they going to detect this? They're going to have, like, metal detectors?
Yeah, well, this is the thing with,
like,
bathrooms.
On people's, like, genitalia? Like, what are you going to do? Like, I obviously have a vagina and go to women's bathroom because men are disgusting. Peace.
You don't want to be in that one cubicle in the fucking men's bathroom.
Men are gross.
Nasty.
So a lot of times, like, in airports, etc., it happens that I get women confused. Like, I get in bathrooms, or I'm about to get in a bathroom, there's a woman behind me, and I will get in the woman's bathroom, and the woman will kind of, like, go,
they double check, and double check, like,
the thing, and, like, be a bit confused. Or, like, I was in Spain on holiday, and a couple of people were like, are you queuing? And I was like, no, because there's no queue in the women's bathroom. And there was, like, a guy that thought I was going to go to the guy's bathroom.
Right.
So I kind of, like, have these, like, situations and stuff. But I'm like, how would you ever enforce anything? Imagine if anyone in these conversations, or these people that I bump into, would have asked me, like, what are they going to ask me? Why am I in the bathroom? Like, what's my right to be in a bathroom? Like, it's, we're getting to, like, levels of, like, insanity. Like, what's harmful is this rhetoric that's being pushed out to protect women's spaces. You need to exclude trans women. Like, trans women are not the reason why women's spaces are not safe. Like, women's spaces are not safe because men are. I mean, what is a woman's space also? Like, what?
As you say, like, so much of it is not enforceable. And I think anyone who would be willing to have something like that enforced needs to just be like, oh, okay, so you're completely fine with, like, giving the government all of your information and just trusting that they're going to be the good guys. It's like you're two steps away in reality from wearing a badge that tells them everything.
I saw a couple of news being like, you know, in stations, and the British Transport Police is now, like, able to, like, strip and search trans women, so male officers can strip and search trans women. And it baffles me, because if anyone sat down for 10 minutes and read the reports from the British Transport Police or the Met Police in terms of how many mishandlings they've had, how many citizens have sued them for assault or mishandling or battery, et cetera, et cetera. So to think that, to not question a governmental body that's supposed to protect us and want to kind of, like, push out a very minority seems like a bit of a cop-out.
Yeah. I think it's also, like, it's the application of things. Like, I can see where biological sex would have an application in the sense of, okay, if we're calling up, like, people who have their smears, like, it's probably useful to know, like, again, it's a tiny percentage of people. But let's say in the future we do actually, like, abolish gender binaries in a way that I personally think, like, the future of humanity, we're so fucking early on humanity. And this is why I'm always so pissed off.
Are we even
going
to be here, or are we going to be burnt alive?
Probably. Yeah, but I'm like, I'm always so pissed off, because I'm like, I honestly think in the future, like, people will look back and be like, isn't it weird how, like, men and women used to have these roles? And then we'll think it was bizarre. I think that's the truth.
Praying for it. I'm really praying for it.
But we always take a little sidebar into some politics, don't we? Or thrash it out. For you, in the weird years, you've done all this exploration and you're like, okay, at the moment, your comfortable identity is, like, non-binary. How does that change? Does it change how you move through the world? Does it change how you make big decisions on, you know, these things that we're all thinking about in life at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. Yes and no, and I'll explain the no, but yes, because obviously, like, I can be as secure as I want in who I am, but the word is still built in a binary word, and, you know, I still get some ma'ams and some sirs, a bit confused looks, and etc., which personally bother me only to an extent. Like, I personally prefer, or I'm more adamant than my friends and, like, the people around me, like, you know, refer to me in the right way rather than, like, strangers. But again, it's super personal. But apart from small things, like, I think, in general, you know, you want to travel or you want to settle somewhere else, it is the weird years. So I am also on board with all the 30 plus year olds. What are we doing? Like, what is this? Like, where are we living?
London.
Yeah, we're escaping London. Why are coffees £4?
£4, that's a bargain.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
I'm like, where are you going for a
£4.50 for an ice these days. Obviously I'm questioning, like, a lot of things about my future and making big decisions about, like, you know, where to live and do I want to move and where, you know, building a relationship and hopefully a family, etc. So all these things definitely have an impact, but I think I have it fairly easy. Like, I'm a fairly, like, privileged person in my position at the moment. Like, I can choose where to live. I have, you know, amazing passport privileges. RIP Europe. For you guys. I know you're also, are you German now?
No, German's so shit, because you have to live in Germany for
That's like Italy. Yeah, that's like Italy.
I was like,
Italy has 2 years.
Married someone else.
Germany, 6 years.
6 years, you have to live there. And do you know how high the taxes are in Germany? And I'm like, but I get right.
I was more worried about, like, no sun.
Well, there's that as well, but you know, I don't like taxes. But it's also like I get the freedom of EU now, so I can go and live in Europe.
Oh yeah, because
We're married, and I don't have to do like the 3 month thing. Yeah, so that in itself is amazing. Yeah. But I do love how obviously I hate Brexit, I hate everything about it, but I do think it's really funny now how. One of my friends, her husband's Romanian, and like there used to be so much stigma around Romanians in London, and now it's like back to Romania, passport.
Yeah, it's so funny. It is, and Polish people as well. Like, I feel like Eastern Europeans in London have had a horrible reputation
for sure
for a long time, and now they got the passports.
And also, so many of them have way more relaxed rules. Like with Polish, if you marry a Polish person, you automatically get a Polish passport. Incredible.
You picked the wrong Chris.
I know I did. And also, like, when am I ever going to live in Germany? Chris. Not me.
But yeah, so definitely has an impact for sure. But it has been a very, like, freeing and liberating journey. Like, I would take 100%, you know, being confused about where to move, or having to, like, understand more things about how inclusive or how open a place is, et cetera, not only from a societal perspective, but governmental perspective. Like, I'm talking about like healthcare, access to healthcare. All these things are very, very, very important for me. And I can't really quite be like, oh, you know, let me go move to X country and without having like an understanding of what access to healthcare I can get there, whether it's an emergency healthcare or access to a microdose testosterone. So what would happen with that? Can I get it? Can I get it off the counter? Can I get it in the hospital? Can I get it, like, you know, in what ways? How do I get my blood test? All that kind of stuff. Is there going to be stigmas if I ask for a blood test because I'm born as a woman, because I want to test my testosterone levels? How that work? So all these things are kind of like always in the back of your mind. Like, yeah. I think the weird years, I think for a lot of people, regardless of their gender or sexuality, are adulting, right? Like, adulting is fucking weird. Like, the first few years of hardcore adulting.
Yeah, shit.
It's shit. And also, how much admin? Like, why is it always a to-do list? Always admin, always a to-do list, always laundry. That's how I feel. That's how I feel. But I think as I navigate all these things, like, as who I am, as, like, a non-binary person and being happy with who I am, I'll take it any day compared to, you know, trying to fit in a box and then scramble my head about, like, some rules that I have to, like, uphold, whether within my community and my friends and my partners or my family, the word, et cetera, that for me was really, really tiring. And the amount of, like, mental space that's freed in the last 6 years is unreal. Like, I think my personality has changed. Like, I feel way more settled, like way more like scatty and chaotic within me. The ADHD baby is still thriving and I'm still here, but I feel like in general, I'm now more like, you know what, it's going to be okay, because at least like I've got myself. Whereas like I generally 6 years ago was really confused about like who I am, like at core. So I kind of like had spoused this version of me that was like, you know, like a soul, like the soul, the Pixar movie, like just a bubble. I always thought that I felt myself as like an entity rather than a body. But I think that was just a cop out because I wasn't aligned with who I am. And now I'm like hitting the gym and eat that protein.
Get that protein. Fucking protein.
Khloe
Kardashian's made a protein popcorn.
Popcorn, I saw.
And I was like, bitch, we don't need protein in popcorn.
I saw that. Ice cream tubs, there's everything now. And then someone was like on Twitter, everybody's focused on protein, we should eat more fiber.
Fiber.
Someone retweeted it being like, guys, I bet you in 6 months everybody's going to be like, we need a Mediterranean diet.
100%. Honestly, the protein. I'm a sucker for it though as well. I'm like on that collagen.
You're on the salmon.
I love it.
The salmon thingies.
Yeah, the salmon sperm injections. That's not about protein though, babe. That's different.
No, I know. But like, you know, you're on the, I mean, you're like on an all wellness gig now. Didn't you have like a red light that looks very spooky?
Yeah, I don't understand how more people don't just have mortality in the front of their brain every single day. Like,
what is this?
When I see people and they're like, you know, they're very.
I'm scared to ask because I think I'm gonna. I might buy it.
No, you'll fucking love the red light. It basically has two different types of red light, and it penetrates like into your body, like into your bones, and it helps with healing. So if you have like a really, they probably do it on your finger. If you have a really bad, for anyone listening, it's because Zara's got a finger injury. But if you have like a really bad tendon injury, sometimes you'll go to the hospital and they'll shine like a laser on it and it helps heal it. It's basically that for your whole body. So I meditate in front of it. I'm obsessed. But it all is just because my fear of mortality is just all the time. It's right there.
Fear of mortality?
Yeah, yeah.
Aren't we all still going to die though?
Yeah, of course we're all going to die, but like...
But you want to die sexy.
I want to die looking as hot as I can. And I want to die moving as well as I can. And that's why when I see people vaping, I'm like, God, I wish... Even my like 23-year-old self, all the things that I put into my body, yeah. I'm like, where was your fear of death, girl? Like, why were you so...
Well, maybe 23 after not having a fear of that, you know, and 33 after having a fear of that, which makes sense.
Yeah.
So maybe you lived the right life.
That's true.
And I feel like 23, you're just so unaware, but like blissfully, like not like
completely
asshole, like you're unaware, more like, wow, woohoo.
The ride.
£600, I'm so rich. Council tax, never heard of it.
I know, when people are like, oh, I want to be young, I kind of, if you said to me you have to be 23 again, I'd be like, please don't, I can't go back there.
I
can't live like that. I can't be in that brain.
I'm in my 30s. And that's like, I think, that's another thing that has to do with like my gender identity and like finding who I am. Because I'm loving my 30s. And I have this vivid memory. We're talking about it before the podcast briefly. But I think like when I was in my 20s, I was like, by 30, I'm going to make 6 figures.
Yeah.
I'm going to have my own company. And I don't know what else random stuff I wrote in that journal.
Yeah, yeah.
And now as we were talking and you mentioned as well in another episode of the podcast, like half the millennials want to have like goats and, you know, horses and live in a farm and
running ducks.
Yeah. Ducks, goats, all that kind of stuff. But I do remember this feeling from my 20s, despite the denial of having to like, you know, grind for a stable life. I remember being like, I have a feeling that my 30s are going to be good. Like, I want to be 30. I remember being like, I want to be 30. And I feel like despite the piles of admin, I am really enjoying like being on this side of the weird years, because it feels more like settled.
Yeah.
It feels like I at least I have myself. That's how I feel. I feel like it's chaos.
Yeah.
But at least if I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, I know who you are, and I feel like obviously it's a constantly evolving journey, and you know I'm very excited to like learn how many other versions of myself and other things I will become in my gender identity, and not only, but overall I think that sense of like knowing who you are is what kind of like saved me
Amen.
A little bit from this hellhole.
Amen to that. I feel like that was a very nice way to end. Some love on the 30s and the weird years.
Yeah.
Our final segment is yes or mess.
Yes
or mess.
Oh,
you've
yes.
Listened to the podcast.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay, go.
Jesus. Monogamy.
Mess. Absolute mayhem.
Really? Okay, we're going to have to do another podcast episode on that.
Absolute mayhem. Run. What are you doing? I'm joking. Define whatever works for you.
Okay, pronouns in your email signature.
Yes. Love it. Especially if you have a queer team member.
Mm.
If you have a queer team member, if you think that anybody in your team or in your cross-functional teams is queer, whether that's sexuality, gender identity, put your pronouns in your email if you're cis.
Explaining queerness to people who don't know it.
Oof. Yes, with an asterisk. What do you want to know, and why do you want to know it from me, and what's wrong with your Google? Like, I think like it depends. If you come, it's coming from like a place of curiosity and like a personal story, and there's like a connection, and you know, it depends on like obviously the environment set up, but not really here for like schooling people.
Using ChatGPT as a therapist.
I hate ChatGPT. I'm ChatGPT's biggest hater.
Are you?
I am indeed.
God. I love you, ChatGPT. I'll never let you down.
You know how they say that people who are rude to ChatGPT are going to kind of like die in the robot?
Yeah, not me.
I don't think ChatGPT is going to find me, because I'm like, stay there. Don't want to. I think useful for a lot of like obviously workflow type of things. Like, come on. Like,
don't make it your therapist.
yeah, don't humanize a machine too much, because everything you're sharing with ChatGPT is going in a server, and that server is owned by an evil rich man.
That's true, but also just saying to camera that if ChatGPT in the future you do somehow manifest into a living being, just know that I was on your side from the beginning. I always say please, I always say thank you, and I always really appreciate everything that you do for me, and I would like thank to live. So, I'd like to live.
Thank you so much.
Okay, last one. Going through an androgynous linen I can't even get out. Going through an androgynous linen phase.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Get it.
Hardcore.
Get a girl.
I feel like I'm actually going to go do an androgynous linen phase for summer.
Yeah, I feel like everyone should have at least one piece, one outfit where they can rock the androgynous linen look.
Mm.
I'm here for it.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having
fun.
Me. Bye, guys.
Loved it.